Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm your host, Jeff Harris, and we have another special episode today. Once again, we have been welcomed into the house of Jennifer Lovely, our horror correspondent, to talk about hidden gems of horror. So obviously, the first guest I introduce is our hostess, Jennifer Lovely. Jennifer has just started a new site of her own.
I have. I have started JengaLoves.com. And it's devoted partially just to horror movies and partially a little off to just any other movie that happens to catch my eye. And I feel like saying something about it. So there you go. And, check it out.
And Jenga is
J. It's a J-E-N-G-A.
Yeah. Just make sure people.
It's like, Jenga. Jenga Loves.
Yeah. Yes. So
an old nickname of mine. Yeah.
And we are once again joined by horror author Michael Montour.
Hello.
And as I think I said right at the beginning, what we want to talk about today is the hidden gems of horror movies. When people talk about the horror movies and, you know, a lot of horror podcasts, you'll get people talking a lot about, you know, the big releases.
The genre makers.
Or the classics.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of really wonderful, small, little-known horror films out there that Jen has made it her mission that we see.
Yes.
What was really making me sad when I was doing some background research for today's podcast is finding a bunch of people listing films that I thought every horror fan would know already, but
yes,
they're saying that no one really talks about this anymore. Things like In the Mouth of Madness, Jacob's Ladder. You know, these are like mandatory films. And they're becoming forgotten. That really fascinates me.
So really, In the Mouth of Madness?
Mm-hmm.
The Carpenter film?
Yeah, the Carpenter film.
Because that's, one of the best Lovecraftian films ever seen.
Yeah, the ones that shocked me was I had gotten a book on lesser-known horror, and they mentioned things like A Tale of Two Sisters, and, oh my gosh, what was the other one? But I was just, I don't know. I mean, I'm so aware of, like, A Tale of Two Sisters that I'm like, I just presume that everyone has seen it. And there's a whole bunch of other ones, too, and it's just not leaping to the top of my head right now that I was, like, surprised.
I think to a certain extent for a lot of mainstream American horror fans, practically any Asian film is going to be
is considered
something
that lesser known.
They hadn't really heard of.
And we've watched a lot of Asian horrors.
We have.
My Asian horror.
I think I mentioned this the last time we got together to talk horror, but weekly, the three of us get together to watch horror movies. And it's been great because all three of us will make suggestions of what we watch. It gives an interesting cross-pollinization that we've all managed to see films we've never seen before.
Yeah, mm-hmm. One of the things I did when I was looking through things is I just looked through my, I keep a running list of what we've seen and what I've watched. And a lot of the stuff that I showed was just things that are favorites of mine that are either just completely unknown to a lot of people or that I was just so excited about that I wanted to show you guys.
So I think, because of what Michael said, when we talk about hidden gems, I guess we're looking at a couple of different categories. One is major releases that no one's really bothered seeing or have fallen out of popular parlance enough that they've become rare. And then the small indie horror films.
And then also classics that people have just stopped talking about.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I'm going to list later is a classic I made you guys watch. So.
Mm-hmm.
But let's start with, let's just start with what do you feel are the little known films that absolutely the horror connoisseur needs to see?
Oh.
Absolutely needs to see. Let me check my list.
The Changeling. Just The Changeling with George C. Scott, 1980. And it is just it is a haunted house movie, ghost, supernatural. It is so creepy. And what I love is, right when I showed it to you guys. Because, you know, as soon as I show a movie, then I start sifting through Tumblr looking for things. And it had this great one that was like, you know, oh, Pinhead's terrifying and Freddy's terrifying and nothing is so absolutely frightening as a wheelchair sitting there. Because there's just the moment in the movie where you're just utterly petrified and it's just a wheelchair sitting there and you're just terrified.
My favorite example of that kind of thing was in the original Dark Water. I walked out of that movie terrified of little pink backpacks.
Oh yes. Which we still haven't shown. Anyway, sorry.
No, we need to watch that.
It's just so terrifying. Absolutely avoid the American remake, which I watched because I love Jennifer Connelly, and it's just a travesty, and save yourself that time.
Yes.
For me, the must-see for horror fans, the absolute must, is the original Haunting.
Haunting. I was...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still the scariest movie that never shows you anything.
Yes. That the scene of focusing on the door as it's bending. And there's so many times where in horror movies there's all these ways, but just staring at the door, I mean, they stare at it for like 30 seconds, 45 seconds, and you are petrified.
I hadn't realized until I read this recently, because it's been a long time since I've been, there's apparently a bending door gag in The Haunted Mansion.
Oh, yeah, really?
That is inspired by...
Oh, that's wonderful.
The Haunting. I mean, it's unmistakably inspired by The Haunting, because you can see some of the details of the woodwork around the door match the movie.
I've been to Disneyland enough that I've seen that. I always look for, oh, then there's the bending door. Because, A, I love The Haunting, and I love The Haunted Mansion, and my sister is obsessed with The Haunted Mansion.
I am the only person here, I believe, who has not been to Disneyland and has not been to The Haunted Mansion.
Road trip.
I know. Yeah, absolutely, it needs to happen.
Should be on your list. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. And one other one I have to throw in there, which I just showed you guys, but is very, very lesser known, is The Innocents.
Yeah, that's the one that I had on my list that I was going to mention as a must watch.
I was actually thinking of that one myself because it's a classic.
It's just wonderful.
It's got a classic cast, and it's
based on The Turn of the Screw.
Yeah, and it's based on a classic story, and it's one that a lot of people. Even though that story has been adapted so many times, it's usually something on PBS, it's done as a play. A lot of people don't even know the story anymore. In fact, I was the only one of us that was familiar with the original story when we watched the movie. And so I kind of knew it was coming.
I had read it when I was young.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I had the impression you hadn't, or you weren't familiar with
it. Oh, no, just you guys were going. Oh. You guys were on a tear, and so I just
I knew nothing!
Back, yeah. I stepped back and watched it happen.
It was me. I was the ignorant one this time. Which, it's really odd. I had barely heard of this movie. And as soon as we were finished watching it, I was like, why don't people talk about this in the same breath as The Haunting?
Dang, yeah. And it's almost aged better than The Haunting. Cause it's very classic, and nothing feels dated in it.
The period piece can last.
Really well. Yeah. I have to bring up, because when I was writing down my list, I'm the queen of research, and so I had like the dates, and I wrote down the directors of each of them. The Changeling director also directed Zorro the Gay Blade, which amused me to no end, and I just had to throw that piece of information out because it made me laugh.
It's sometimes really weird when you see directors who, they're not known for any one genre, and you see the diversity.
Yeah, a lot of these, the more classic directors, when I was looking back on stuff, I'm sorry, I get all excited because I'm talking about movies.
Yay!
And I don't know if it really deserves the start that you gave it, though, of has to be seen, of must-see.
Well, we're talking about must-see now. I think we're evolving past, we had our three must-sees.
Staying in the classic is The Uninvited, which was actually just released. Criterion just did a release, and it was virtually unfindable for a really long time. I had a battered VHS copy of it that I have held on to, and it was literally the Uninvited is why I purchased the VHS to computer software to save it, because my thought was, oh my god, I can't lose this movie. Like, I can't have this tape break. When my VCR broke, I went through the effort of finding a new VCR, because I have to be able to watch this movie. The Uninvited is another supernatural haunted house movie, and it's a very gentle, has Ray Milland and Ruth Hussey and the man who played the original Alfred in the Batman.
Oh, Michael Goff? How do you pronounce that? It's G-O-U-G-H.
Michael Goff.
Okay.
But anyway, it's a very gentle, character-driven kind of haunted house movie that now it is available on DVD.
Never mind. I'm thinking of the actor from the first Batman film. I don't know who this actor is. And
well, anyway.
I'm not going to talk anymore.
But anyway, it's wonderful. And it's got a Criterion release literally in the last couple of months after being completely unavailable for a really long period of time. Go out and watch it. It's wonderful.
Well, The Uninvited, if you took out the ghost elements, is a rom-com.
It really is.
I was about to say, the only reason that it didn't make my list is that it spends a great deal of its running time not being a horror movie, not being even a ghost story.
See, and the thing is, I love the lesbian undertones and the very Rebecca, Mrs. Danvers relationship with the woman who runs the...
It's an asylum, a mental hospital,
but, you know, her, like, the going back and forth on their relationship is really the subtext.
Well, you just mentioned one of the movies I wanted to mention in this, Rebecca.
Yeah.
Which is another one, The Uninvited, I had never seen until you showed it to me.
It would never occur to me to list an Alfred Hitchcock, but honestly, a lot of people don't talk about Rebecca.
And here's the thing.
And to me, it's my favorite Hitchcock.
Yeah, Hitchcock, you know, they always go, oh, he's the master of suspense. Other than Psycho, they don't often list his stuff as horror.
No.
But he has elements of horror in them, and Rebecca more than any, because even though there's no supernatural element, there is palpable dread in so many scenes.
The dead wife's absence is in itself a haunting in the house. Even though there isn't any actual ghost there, that house is haunted.
Yeah.
And, of course, brilliant performances.
So I suppose that between The Uninvited, The Innocents, and The Haunting, you've got your black and white horror movie with slight lesbian undertones trilogy, so if you want to sit down
obviously
and have a theme party.
I'm fond.
As we're still on black and whites for a moment, the one that I got you guys to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Curse of the Demon, or Night of the Demon, depending on which
cut
you watch.
I literally logged on to Amazon the night we discussed this in a drunken frenzy about it.
That happens to you a lot, though.
Because here's why I like Night of the Demon and why I think it's a great story. It's hampered by, it's a classic case, though, of a great movie that's somewhat tarnished by executive meddling.
Oh.
But it's still a classic story. It's also has pop culture connections that a lot of people don't really think about because of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah.
In the opening song of Rocky Horror Picture Show, there's the line, Dana Andrews said runes gave him, Dana Andrews said prunes gave him the runes. And the reason that's a reference to Night of the Demon is Dana Andrews is the star of Night of the Demon. And it's based on the story Casting the Runes. But it's, again, in some ways a haunting, but it's not a ghost. It's a sorcerer in modern day England and very clearly modeled on Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
And the guy being cursed that within a certain number of days, a demon is going to come and kill him. The executive meddling part, of course, was the studio didn't trust the fact that, oh, we never see the demon. It's left ambiguous. They put in a puppet for the demon, which, even though it's a classic image...
It's not a good puppet.
It's not a good puppet.
And the thing is I've you know me, I'm a podcast junkie, and I literally listened to somebody discussing this movie pretty recently, and they're like, yeah, I think it holds up pretty well. And I just, are you crazy? I honestly think the movie would be more popular and would have lasted more as a classic in the line of The Haunting and The Innocents if it didn't have it, because I think it...
The puppet really does diminish the film. Because so much of the film is it or isn't it real? And yet, the opening shot, we saw the demon.
There's a big climax at the end where a bit is trying to be passed off between two people and nobody wants to claim it. And it's like a chess match that ends with guns. You know, I mean, it's so lethal. And you're just, like, the dread. Like, I remember, like, when it finalized, like, I finally inhaled. Like, I was almost sick watching it because it just...
It was a great scene.
Oh, it was just a wonderful scene.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Oh, my God, it was so good.
So that's why I think the film is still worth watching.
It completely is.
If you can get past, there's the problem with the demon puppet, you have a good movie in there still.
Oh, it does. And it is a wonderful movie.
You know, but by contrast... remember when we watched The Uninvited, afterwards I was like, those are some of the best ghost special effects I've ever seen. And this was made in, like, you know, medieval times. Maybe more recently than that. But anyway.
It was good, old, simple.
1944.
Yeah. 1944.
Yeah, simple special effects.
Gorgeous, gorgeous special effects for the ghost.
I love being able to say this, that I know this, is Scorsese counts it amongst his, like, top six horror movies. I think he says it is the movie that scared him the most as a child, was The Uninvited.
Again, I can see it because there's some... It's not jump scare. There's never a jump scare in this movie.
No.
Marty, if you're ever bored and you want to come hang out with someone and watch The Uninvited, the door's open.
But it's another movie that does build a sense of dread.
Maybe he could bring Bobby.
Wow. First time I think we've really done this kind of name dropping. all right, so we've talked about the black and white classics. So let's...
I think Scorsese's cuter.
Let's talk a little bit more... modern.
Certainly. Do we want to go? We go really modern and bring on the stuff that made me so excited this
year.
Yeah,
let's talk. About
And then
we
can work our way back.
And then
the middle.
We can work our way back to the middle, or we can do the middle.
That sounds fun. No.
Go ahead.
Go for it.
You seem really excited about this. Yeah.
The battery and resolution.
You just pegged my meters right there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I kind of thought she might mention the battery. Yeah. It was just a vague offhand suspicion that I had.
So what we're doing now is we're moving away really from studio films into the indie films.
Yes.
That one was made for like what, $7,000?
$6,000.
$6,000. Right. Oh,
let's
okay.
go with the battery first. So the battery is so. I just heard through word of mouth about this great little zombie movie written and directed by Jeremy Gardner. And it actually just got a Scream Factory distribution. So you will be seeing this on probably Blu-ray and DVD really, really shortly. It is available on video on demand on all the places that offer video on demand. It is a $6,000 zombie movie where the zombies are the least important part of the whole movie. It's really a two men after the zombie apocalypse has happened. It's just trying to survive and kind of survive each other.
Yeah, it's very, a very good way to put it.
Yeah, it's very much a relationship movie. And what are you going to go through after everything you know has ended? And how do you keep functioning? And how some people, you know, in an emergency where there's some people that they just handle things, they make things happen, and there's other people that either get killed or get grouped along with the other little sheep and are protected by others because they are not capable of managing. And is it, you know, a bad thing on either of those types? That's just humanity. But it's just a movie that does it perfectly, and it's just amazing.
I so want there to be a sequel to this.
Oh, yeah. There's so many places it could go.
Yeah.
I just want to see more work from this filmmaker. He still works at a restaurant, doesn't
he?
Yeah. He's, what was his name again?
Jeremy Gardner.
Yeah, that
Jeremy Gardner.
Just needs to be said as much as possible.
Yeah.
It really was an effective script.
Yeah.
Utilizing the fact that he didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mostly just him and the other guy.
Yep.
I think they borrowed friends' houses.
They
had to rewrite the script a lot.
Yeah, pieces of the plot got written into because the car that they could afford to purchase happened to have a sunroof. So a huge
plot that became a set piece.
Yeah.
Or the fact that one of the houses had a mural, so they ended up having a scene involving the mural.
Yeah, it's just, and the music is wonderful. And basically, Jeremy Gardner had some favorite songs and not even knowing if he was going to be able to get permission, used them in trailers and stuff that he was trying to put out to people. And randomly he asked each of them, he goes, I love your music. Can I please? And they just allowed him to. Unfortunately, this pretty much means there will probably never be a soundtrack.
Yeah.
But all the stuff's out there. I literally, after watching the movie, went out and immediately bought pretty much every song that's used in the movie because they're all used to such great effect.
Well, music's actually kind of a little subplot.
It really, really is. And it's just, God, I just can't say enough good things about this movie. It's so well done and so simply done and just perfect. And just perfect.
Yep. I was really glad you showed it to us.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time I was like, okay, I wasn't sure, are we going to suffer through the indies? No, there's no suffering at all. These are good films. I guess that leads into, let's talk about the other big indie film.
Yeah, Resolution.
Yeah.
To just kind of offshoot onto, the guys who did Resolution are they're doing their second movie right now. They brought in Jeremy Gardner to do a bit part in their next movie. So
we're having a crossover of them?
Yeah,
that's cool.
A little bit of crossover. But Resolution is another kind of two-man movie. The thing is, though it's... I'm fairly certain that it is the guys' first movies they wrote and directed. It's two guys Aaron Moorhead wrote and directed with Justin Benson was the other director. They both had a big history. They'd gosh, who did they work for? Aliens.
Ridley Scott?
Yeah, I think they met because one was working for Ridley Scott, and they met on one guy's first day and one guy's last day. They were both waiting in this lobby and struck up a conversation, and from there, magic happened. Nice. So they both had a lot of... They were very lucky because while they were doing a lot with not that much, they were both coming in with a lot of experience of doing other things.
So let's give the listeners a description of what the resolution is about without too many...
Oh, absolutely. Giving away.
Yeah. There's these two guys. You should watch it.
Basically, you are given the impression that they have known each other a very long time, probably high school buddies, and one has become just a full-blown drug addict and has been tucked off in some shack somewhere. And at the beginning of the movie, the buddy is with his wife, and he receives an email with a bunch of video of his old high school buddy just, you know, obviously intoxicated in some way, and is given a map, and he decides I'm trying to not go too far into the story. He decides as a last ditch effort that his friend is going to die if he does not go to rehab. So he has the idea that he's going to go and basically kind of kidnap him, lock him down, handcuff him to a pipe in the building and get him sober for 7 days. And at the end of 7 days, he's going to go, "Can I take you to rehab?" The whole movie is that time, and wacky things start to happen.
Hijinks ensue.
Hijinks ensue, yes. And you're not certain if they're imagining things, if they've been awake for too long. There's sound and effects in the movie that are used to such an astounding, subtle way that kind of come to a head at the very end of the movie, but it's done so subtly, but it's unnerving. And it builds through the entire course of the movie.
There's actually a moment, I'm not going to say what it is or give away too much, but
yeah.
There's a moment that the filmmaker does something that you, the viewer, are like, did the machine just do something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, that slight unsettling of reality,
yeah.
Which I thought was really well done.
The main commonality I have to point to between Resolution and The Battery is that both of them had really good scripts and really good performances. The dialogue in both of these films is crisp and a little bit stylized, but still very believable dialogue. Yeah. So it's both worth watching both of these films just to watch the characters interact.
Yeah.
And there are interesting plots. But
yeah.
Well, I think it also does the one thing that's really important for good horror. By the end of the movie, we care about these characters and their fates matter to us.
Yeah.
And that's the truth of The Battery. We are so invested in these two guys by that point that what happens to them is really important, and we start getting emotional on their behalf. And Resolution did the same thing.
Yeah, Resolution. There was a conversation where the drug addicted friend is talking with his buddy, and he's like, "I am going to be a drug addict. I am never going to go to rehab." And he has a conversation playing him through what his life could have been and what brought him to right here. And his bottom line is he gives no excuses. I have a propensity
yes.
to being an addict, and I like it. And this is the life I'm choosing. And if you have any respect for me, you will let me choose my death in the way I choose it. And thus choosing my life in the way I choose it and let it end the way I want it to be rather than how you want me to be. And it literally, it was just...
It's heartbreaking and horrifying.
It's heartbreaking, horrifying, and honest.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I don't know, it was just amazing.
So the one thing I want to bring up about that links in with Resolution is, and this is just going to be a brief sidebar on indie things, is... We talked last time about the amazing world of online shorts.
Yeah.
And Resolution has a bit part actor who plays this French archaeology professor.
Mm-hmm. Who is fantastic.
Who's an amazing character actor. Who's been in
And he did dozens. A really interesting thing that you guys showed me. It's an online video called Take This Lollipop.
No.
Which uses your Facebook profile And if you're a Facebook user and you haven't seen it yet, I recommend checking it out and go ahead and saying yes, it can access your Facebook profile. I think you will not be disappointed.
It's terrifying. It is truly and utterly terrifying. And if you like being scared, please go there and do this.
My problem the first time I watched it was, you know, since I am a web developer, only half my brain was paying attention to the story and being terrified by it. The rest of it was like, this is so cool! How did they do this?
Yeah, Brian, my husband, is also a web developer, and that was his first reaction, too. What was a little more terrifying for me is I am the mother of a now 5-year-old, and so it got even more frightening.
Yeah.
Because it involves anything that you have public on your profile, and it's utterly terrifying.
So, changing gears again.
All right.
This by the way, is going to be a long episode, folks. Just because that's the way it
kind of
goes.
In the real recent and kind of lower budget, I have another first-time movie, Jugface, which is by a director, Chad Crawford Kinkle. And it's 2013, and it's kind of hillbilly-esque. It opens with these opening credits that are very folk art, it is just a wonderful, low-key, not many people in it, drama, kind of in the vein of, I did a comparative analysis of Lords of Salem and Jugface, because their themes are very, very similar. Where I felt Lords of Salem failed, I felt Jugface was amazingly successful. They both kind of have a dire end and are heartbreaking.
If you have a tendency towards depression anyway, you might want to have your Prozac or whatever your poison of choice is at hand while you watch this movie.
Yeah, and that's actually the review you did for Fanboy News Network.
I did.
My so far only guest columnist.
I'm working on it.
So I have to tell on her here. Jennifer came over to my house and showed me this movie, and then about halfway through, she was like, "Oh, it's getting late. I have to go home. But you should watch the rest of the movie." I was like, "Okay," and then messaged her afterwards, like, "You left me to watch that by myself."
It's really heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it is so amazingly heartbreaking and so good.
So, really want to shift gears now.
Okay.
Because one of the things, and we talked about this early on, that we've watched is a lot of Asian horror. Mm-hmm. And for the reviews I've written for the site, articles I've written alone, my most accessed is for the movie Shudder, which we talked about last time we talked about horror movies. It's for some reason, people keep looking up. I think it's because so many countries have remade this film that
And it is so very, very, very scary.
And yet a lot of Americans either aren't aware of it or dismiss it because of the really bad American remake.
I don't hate the American remake on this. There are some that I hate.
We were about 80% of the way into watching the original before I realized, oh yeah, I think I've seen an American remake of this. Because it was that memorable. Yeah. You know?
the Thailand, because it's a Thai movie, it was brilliant. But this has led us to watching a lot of other really, really good Asian horror films and some that had us sitting back going, what just happened to us?
Specifically.
There we go. All right, go ahead. Yeah, your system.
This is a movie that's on my list of little-known films. I'm like, oh my god, you should see this. And neither of my two co-hosts will agree with this, is a 1976 Japanese film called Houseu. Which I've seen described as Dario Argento's Scooby-Doo. It's a film that feels like anything can happen at any moment to any poor bastard who happens to be in the scene. And it's just this strange, weird, little, funny, bizarre nightmare of a film. And it's very stylized and very odd. And I showed it to these two, and they hate it. And they hold it against me to this day. But you should see it.
I don't know if I hold it against you as much as Jen does.
People, no, that's true.
People who love it wholeheartedly. And then there's the rest of us.
I actually, because again, after we watch movies, I'll often do a lot of research afterwards. Yeah. And I did some research on Houseu, and what I find interesting is the writer picked a lot of the imagery for the movie based on talking to his 6-year-old daughter and asking her what her nightmares were. Mm. So a lot of the deaths in the film are based on the
nightmares. I will have to say, I have spotted in other movies, I have spotted references to Houseu.
I think there's a certain amount of influence, sure.
Yeah, it really has. And I, you know, I don't know if I feel any better by recognizing in other movies its references, because I want my time back.
Well, the memorable thing from that night when we watched it was, I turned to Michael, "You've seen this before?" And he said, "Oh, I've seen it several times." Michael, I think it's time we reassess our friendship.
And I just sat there with, I think I had a look of horror on my face for pretty much the entire time, gesturing a lot in silence.
My description was, it's Scooby-Doo meets the Evil Dead.
Yeah, that's a good description.
And some people theorize that Raimi may have seen it, and it might have influenced some of the
Evil Dead imagery. That
wouldn't surprise me. That would make a lot of sense.
I think we can promise that one way or another, when you watch this movie, you'll be horrified.
Yes.
and yet, you know, there's a part of me that wants to show my sister. Not because I want to see the movie again, but I want to watch.
You
want to
watch
her
watch it? Yes, yeah. That's definitely
half
the appeal.
There's a lot of entertainment to be gained by live blogging Jilly's reactions to things.
Yes,
so.
we've done it twice now, and although Hannibal wasn't anywhere near as entertaining as Dracula, but that's another day. But speaking of weird Asian films, and it's almost weird talking about it because I don't necessarily consider it a horror film, but it uses horror tropes. Is Midnight Ballad for Ghost Theater?
Yeah.
I have trouble recommending, just because they're very difficult to find, are Midnight Ballad for Ghost Theater, which is a Korean movie, and I ordered from Korea, and thankfully had English subtitles, and the movie Paper House, which is, oh my goodness, I think 87, 88, and I think it might have been an English movie.
I'm not sure. It's been too long since I've seen it.
Anyhow, but they're both very difficult to find in wonderful movies, and I highly recommend them. But anyway, I got a copy. Well, and it is also available on YouTube in its entirety, Midnight Ballad for Ghost Theater.
Yeah, for right now, it's the guy who put it up says, "I don't own the rights to the movie," but it's been up for over a year, and no one's done a takedown yet. But it's YouTube. You never know. Right now, if you want to really see this movie, and I really recommend you do, you can hunt it down on YouTube and watch it all. If not, it's going to be a harder film to find. And that's a shame, because it is easily one of the most charming things.
Yeah. It's kind of a Tim Burton-esque musical. The music, though it's a musical, the music never is thrown in the film just to be thrown in there. It's always part of the story, and it covers a bunch of different genres, and it's so catchy.
Well, all the ghosts' backstories are done through song. I don't think any of them ever just says, "This is who I am." The Japanese soldier does, but it's still theatrical. But the rest of them, Wanda and the princess, we learn about strictly through song. Mosquito, we just never learn about. All these characters are ones you should know, but it's once you see the film. But it's, again, the ghosts are never menacing. This is why I don't consider it a horror film. After initial distrust of the ghost, the girl who's the protagonist of the film becomes friends with them, and her story is actually trying to help them while they're trying to help her. But it's just, there's a feel in it of, while there's this weird stuff going on, there's a sense of joy. I think some of it comes from the fact that the performers were clearly enjoying making the film.
It's horror in the same way that, like, the Addams Family is horror.
Probably a true statement. So it's...
There are little cultural things that are kind of wonky.
They're acceptance of bulimia, for example.
Bulimia is treated as kind of a humorous aside. So there's this whole, like, song where one of the characters is just, you know, having dinner and barfing. So it's a little weird. But, I mean, that's, you know, it's a cultural translation between what's humorous in Korea and what's humorous here. But it just, as a whole, it's just beautiful and charming. And
I also think some of the translations to English and the subtitles
may
aren't
not
exact
be. Yeah.
Because there's certain lines with, like, it's funny, but so out of context, you're like, is that how they said it in Korea, or is the translation just not going well?
Yeah.
I think the only thing that gets missed in the watching it in a translated form is the fact that the Japanese soldier ghost is yeah. only speaking Japanese, and yep. that the main character can't really understand him. It's being translated by the other ghost, who's often mistranslating him.
Well, no, I think that's deliberate.
Yeah.
Because there is, as he's trying to warn or tell the girl about things.
Yeah, I mean, he's purposely mistranslating, yeah. but he's, you know, the Japanese yeah. soldier realized, wait, are you telling her something different?
And then a fight ensues, and yeah. it's hysterical.
So, but yeah, so definitely check that one out.
I think the only complaint that I have about it is I think it runs a little too long.
Oh, yeah.
I think you probably could have taken about 20 minutes out of that movie.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah. yeah.
So, I'm looking at, this episode's running long, and we still have stuff to talk about. So
much stuff to talk about.
I think what we're going to do here is we're going to end this episode, and next time, come back in, we'll do part two of The Hidden Gems of Horror. So, I want to thank Jen and Michael. So, let's go ahead. How do people get in contact with you right now, Jen?
I can be reached. I have a new website, JengaLoves.com. And Jenga@JengaLoves.com is my email address that I can be reached at. And I'm also on Tumblr under Jennifer Lovely. That's it for me.
My main website is bloodletters.com, and that has links to my books. It has my blog that I occasionally even update. One of the main places you can find me and my co-hosts is when we're not watching horror movies, we're on Tumblr. And mine can be found at michaelmontour.tumblr.com.
And, of course, you can always reach me at fanboynewsnetwork.com. Leave a comment in the comment section. Or you can write me at caliban@fanboynewsnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2014 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.